Hello, welcome to Misadventures, a Gloomhaven podcast brought to you by Gamer Public Radio. This special episode, we're going to do a deep dive on the Tinkerer. So this episode will spoil some of that. However, it is a base class in the game, so please enjoy responsibly. Hey guys, I'm Casey, and I'm here with Steve.
Hey, how's it going?
Steve has been playing the Tinkerer in our Gloomhaven group, as I'm sure you're all aware by now. And he just retired this past session. He is the first player to get a retire in the party. So that was fun to finally crack open a box. but I thought this would be a good time to kind of look back on the Tinkerer. You just spent, what, 9 sessions, I believe, playing as.
Was it 9 sessions or scenarios?
9 scenarios. Yeah, 9 scenarios, about, what, 5 sessions or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
So yeah, you got a decent number of playthroughs in. You just hit level 4 right as you retired.
Yep, pretty much. I hit it, and the experience from the end of that round would have knocked me to level 4.
Nice. You got a decent feel for the character, right?
Yeah,
and he was your Gloomhaven first.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess let's just start off. What were your initial expectations for the Tinkerer going in? How did you see him fitting in with the rest of the party? Because really no character exists in a vacuum, right?
Right. First session, I think I was the first guy to show up at your place.
Yeah.
And you had laid these out and give me sort of a broad strokes. You know, this is a tank, this is a support class, so on and so forth. And I liked the idea of that support class being able to get in there and help you guys out, healing stuff. The card recovery seemed pretty interesting. Even though I didn't quite understand the mechanics yet of how the rounds played, it seemed like it was going to be a pretty useful role, especially with a larger group of players.
Okay. And it's nice, too. I don't know if you realize it at the time, but he's got like the largest card pool of all the base characters.
Yes. After that first scenario, that was quite apparent.
And so just a bit more background on the group that we're playing with, in case some people are new or maybe you've forgotten. So you're playing Tinkerer, and then I'm running the Brute.
Yep.
Garrett plays the Spellweaver, and Skip is playing the Mind Thief. So we got a pretty well-rounded group there. We also, and this is just worth noting because, again, characters don't exist in a vacuum, and I feel like the skills and cards you take are going to be dependent on your group. We somehow are an extremely summons heavy group. I think at the time before you retired, I think we had the potential to summon 6 things at one time through items and character abilities.
Yes,
that were
equipped. I forgot about the item cards. Yeah.
Yeah. It gets a little ridiculous, which it's nice. We never quite go that high, but it seems like we always have a couple on the field at any given time.
We do have that versatility, yes, and it's nice to have some that are like item cards and instead of ones that are burning out deck cards.
Yeah.
I think that might be useful later in the game.
Another nice thing about some of those summons is you as a support guy, the summons are going to be very predictable in what they do mm-hmm. every turn, and then it gives you more heal targets too. So I know a number of times you kind of chipped in to help keep those things alive. Especially yep. that rat horde.
Yep, just to soak up more damage and bite things in the ankles.
Yeah. So let's dig into your card pool a little bit. We'll kind of go through.
Do you want me to just go like kind of one by one and sort of what I was thinking when I was looking at them?
Yeah, that would be good. And then we can kind of, you know, if any cards in particular, once you know, after a few levels, like this is a core card to this class, like it makes the whole engine run, or, you know, any big important cards, please point that out.
Sure thing. So it's worth pointing out that first session, I think you advised us just to stick with our level 1 cards since we didn't really have an understanding of the mechanics.
Yeah, that's what the book recommends as well, mm-hmm. the rule book. And I feel like that's fair to do, right? I mean, you kind of get your feet wet, I think all of us swapped in some X cards after the first round.
Oh, yeah, right? Absolutely. The first round was definitely educational. as you're very keen to point out, that trap I laid in the very first room that we almost immediately ran away from. And observing the creatures later on in the game, the card I'm referring to is the Proximity Mine.
Yeah.
Which the upper on that lets you create a 6 damage trap in an adjacent hex. it gives you 2 experience, but it is a lost card.
And it only gives you that 2 experience when the trap is sprung.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. The move 4 is nice, but at that point you're just keeping it in for the move because especially in that playthrough and the subsequent one, I kind of noticed traps are tricky to get monsters to run into.
Yeah.
Because their pathing will take them around it kind of thing. And there is another card, the hook gun, that lets you pull things, but those are both uppers, so you wouldn't even be able to do it in the same move, which kind of limits that idea, that combo.
It also goes on a 62, so you might not even be able to put it down before the enemies do stuff on that turn.
Right. It's a... Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I kind of felt like after we got a couple of scenarios in, the environment and the enemies are putting down plenty of traps for us to play around with. You don't really need to supply your own a lot of times.
Right. And, like, you can have some fun with it. We had that one... I'm not going to spoil anything. We had a scenario where there was a predictable type of movement with one of the characters, and I preempted that by planting a trap, and it did 6 damage, and that was cool.
Yeah.
But it wasn't going to kill him. It didn't really do much for the overall scenario on that one.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
as you said, it's a pretty high initiative cost, mm-hmm. so there's the real value in it is really just that move 4, and I didn't feel like that was enough to keep it.
Right. And in that one example you used, that was the perfect case for it. You had an idea of like you had a very good certainty that you're going to be able to spring that trap off.
Right.
And at the end of the day, it's still 6 damage for a loss, which is.
Yeah, that's a heavy cost.
Yeah.
The other one I dropped pretty quickly once we had the X cards going in was the Energizing Tonic. Now mm-hmm. that has an upper where you have a range 2 heal 5 and gives you 2 experience. And a lower of move 6, and you get experience 1. But they're both losses.
Yeah, that's tough.
And neither of them seemed like a big enough play to be worth losing a card.
Especially when you compare it to Stamina Booster, right? Heal 4, range 3. So you lose a little bit of a heal, but you don't lose the card. Which that's right. A level 2 card, which we'll get into later, I guess. But yes. Like you have other heals in there that are just as valid, if not more so, in certain situations that you get to keep.
Right, exactly. One of the, I think the first Kaider dropped was the Energizing Tonic, just because like we burned through cards real early on that first scenario,
yeah,
not realizing that's how it played. So I dropped that one and I brought in Potent Potables. Now that card, I love that card, and that was extraordinarily useful. I mean, throughout the entire time I was playing with it. The upper on that gives you 4 slots, and every time you do a heal action, you get to heal for 2 extra damage. And on the 2nd and 4th slot, when you execute a heal action, you also gain 1 experience.
As a brute, I was very much on the positive receiving end of that a number of times, where you're healing me for like 7. It's like, yeah, that sounds lovely.
Exactly. And there's also a, Restorative Mist has a bottom of move 2, heal 1, affecting all adjacent enemies, or adjacent allies. And this Potent Potables jack that up to healing 3. So if there was a cluster of teammates and they all just took damage from an AoE, if I can get in there and run this now I'm healing for 3 on each person, which was really useful.
And that's great when you have summons on the board, as we often do. You get the party members and the summons. The one issue I found you running into a couple times with Potent Potables is you would have that out and you would maybe be at full health or just a couple down, and then you would need to long rest.
Yep. Yeah. And I was actually just going to mention that.
So that's gotta burn it.
Yeah. It's really what I've learned kind of playing through it now is, if you have a lot of enemies in the early room, that would be a good thing to throw down like on turn 1. So you have it and you can heal up any damage that your teammates have taken. But if it doesn't seem that rough in the first room, I'd probably wait until after my first long rest to throw down a Potent Potables, just so I get more mileage out of it and it has more utility.
Sure.
And it also alters the playstyle a little bit, since it does boost the healing. I tended to wait a little longer to heal people since it would do more, and I didn't want to overheal, and now I'm losing like 1 or 2 points that I didn't need to.
For sure, yeah.
Let's see here. I guess I'll just start going through some of the level 1 cards that I really liked. My personal favorite, we'll just start with that one because it's probably a bad card, but I had a lot of fun with it, was the Flamethrower.
Yeah.
Now, the bottom of it is nice. It's got shield one that gives you and everyone around you shield one. Mm-hmm. Limited utility, I think. I think if you have that in the starting room and there's a bunch of people, you can pop that, give everyone shield one. Or if everybody's kind of clogged up in a hallway or something, that might be useful. But I noticed as a tinker, I wasn't usually in the thick of it with the rest of you. I kind of hang back and kind of count on the character's range. So it's sort of a specialty use case for the bottom. The upper is a loss, but it can kind of turn the tables. It's a cluster three attack. It does three damage. I have to be adjacent, but it also inflicts wounds on everyone, which is really nice. And the first piece of equipment I took was the Eagle Eye goggles.
Yes.
And I would commonly couple this with Flamethrower and some of the other area of effect attacks I had so that I'm gaining advantage on each target within the cluster. And that did some pretty serious damage at some points.
The thing I like about Flamethrower, and so the shield, you were able to use it fairly effectively. I feel like we would work pretty well together. Like you would know when that might be useful, and you'd kind of hint that that was something we needed to kind of stay grouped up for, and we could plan around it and get the most out of it.
Yep.
But like the Flamethrower part, you would bust out at really core moments, and you would be really effective with it. And the nice thing about it is if you look at the top, that Flamethrower part has three upgrade slots on it. You can increase the spread of it and the damage on it. So it should scale pretty well as you level up too.
That's probably my biggest regret in retiring this character is that I didn't upgrade that Flamethrower card before I did.
Yeah. we just didn't quite have the income coming in yet to upgrade cards. So,
yeah. So I think the next one I'd like to talk, Ink Bomb was another area of effect card. It's a loss. It's real nice though. So it'll do four damage and this is range three. And if I can get range three on anyone in this three person cluster, I can target them all. You get an experience for each person targeted and you're generating a moon. Again, I would use the Eagle Eye goggles if I had available for this to gain advantage on all these attacks. And the bottom of it was a cycled move four, which was really nice for moving around. And very similar to that card was the Net Shooter, which is sort of like a light version of Ink Bomb. So it would do the same kind of range, only attack three. You get one experience again for every target. The nice thing about this was that it added a mobilize to everything you targeted. So that was really useful if we'd open a door, see like a cluster of big things that we couldn't deal with immediately. Mm-hmm. And I could get range on it, immobilize them, maybe soften them up a little bit and buy us an extra turn if need be.
The Net Shooter is nice too because it has the bottom of immobilize an adjacent enemy and then you get to move to. So if you did get in a situation where you were in trouble, mm-hmm. it's got an initiative of 19 and then you bail out of there very quickly.
I never actually used this combo. I kept meaning to, but I found
other things to do.
Well, it was that or like one of the cards I didn't have when it would have been a good time to use this combo. But Net Shooter's bottom actually would pair really nice with Flamethrower. So if you found yourself in a situation where you're close to a bunch of enemies, you can pop a Flamethrower, do three damage, inflict wound on them. Then you can immobilize them and move two away. Yeah, it's a specific scenario that I didn't run into.
So you just talked about three area of effect cards, and they basically have the same pattern on them. By default, they can hit three apiece. The thing to keep in mind here is that we are playing as a party of four, and with a party of four, you tend to see more enemies. And so those area of effects have a higher likelihood of going off and like hitting as many targets as possible.
Yep.
And the effects you're putting on their wound is great for getting through shield. And immobilize is just great for everybody. It just kind of helps us control the battlefield when things are getting hectic. So because we're such a big party, it really lets some of those shine.
Yep. There's also a couple cards. So like my basic attack card generally was Enhancement Field. It's a range three, attack three. And its bottom is nice because I can add plus one attack to all adjacent allies. All attacks for all adjacent allies this round, which is really nice. And the other one that I used quite a bit, well, two of them, Reinvigorating Elixir and Restorative Mists. They both have the same upper of heal three at range three. Restorative Mist has a move two, heal one, which again, I could run and heal people up, boosted with the potent potables. Now I'm healing for three. The bottom of the reinvigorating elixir was really interesting because that allows me to let an adjacent ally recover all their discarded cards. It gives two experience, and it is a loss, but that could be just like a major game changer. So like if we're in the heat of battle and you got to play a card to keep somebody else alive or do damage on something, and it's still going to be dangerous for you, that'd be really bad for you to take a long rest, or risky to take a short rest if you don't want to get rid of a really useful card. So this would allow you to get all your cards back, be in the game right in that turn, and not take a loss.
It did seem like it took you a little while to get a feel for like when the right time to use that is, because if you use it in the wrong spot, it's more of a waste on your end than anything.
Correct. The thing I noticed about the Tinker is a lot of his strongest cards are lost cards.
Yes.
And the real trick is learning how to pace yourself into the second or third room before you start using some of these heavier cards. So that, one, you're going to have enough longevity to make it through the scenario, which I think there were only two scenarios that I exhausted out, and one of which was the tail end of my gunning for my retirement.
Go ahead.
You first.
I was going to say, another thing about, so you have those two cards that are heal three at range three, and it being, again, because we're such a big party, we're fighting more enemies and taking more damage than a party of two or three might. And we have so many summons on the board. It seemed like you always had targets for those.
Yes. Almost. Yeah. I was sort of centered around you or right behind you guys. And I could usually get a line on one of you, if not two. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they're both uppers, so I couldn't play them in the same thing. I considered pairing it with, which is the one? Reviving Shock, which is one of the X cards. Because that has a bottom of heal five at range two, but it is a loss. And I think that's why I kind of opted against it. And now the top, cycle didn't seem to do enough to make it worth it to me. Because it's you can attack two targets at range three, but it's only doing two damage. So what were you going to say?
You could pair those. I don't know if you ever did. You could pair those two cards together and do Reinvigorating Mist or Reinvigorating Elixir on the top. And then the movement on Restorative Mist. And you get the two heals, and if you happen to have Potent Potables up, which it might be the best named card in the game.
You're right.
That's a ton
of
healing.
We did not make any Jeopardy jokes at all, I promise.
that's a ton of healing coming out in one turn.
Yeah. As far as... what's the other stuff we used? So we also had Stamina Booster, which is range 3, heal 4. So, again, more healing. That one came with... it's a loss on the bottom, but it allows an ally within range 3, so not just adjacent, range 3 to recover one of their lost cards, which I used with you two or three times to pretty good effect.
Yeah. As a brute, there's certain cards that I really love to use and can do a lot of damage if used in good areas. So I would be okay with doing losses on those earlier in the game if the opportunity presented itself. And so being able to get that back from time to time to use it again in a later room was great.
Yep. Sorry, that was kind of jumping ahead to level two, but
let's
wrap up with the level ones I kept in. Harmless Contraption, which is you summon a decoy and it's got 6 health. It moves 2. There's no attack or anything like that. It just goes towards enemies, soaks up damage, draws fire. Early on, it was pretty useful, especially while we were getting our legs on this game. It was moving. It was drawing attention. We were able to move around enemies and wipe them out. But I think as the game progresses and we start facing tougher enemies, it doesn't have a lot of utility on that. Like you saw, I spawned it into pop traps or open doors, or like throw it into open doors to bait things in there, and it was just dying way too fast. So considering that's also a loss, it I don't think it's going to be a good mid to late game card.
Yeah, but it does scale because you can level it up, but you can only do that so much, right?
But I don't think it ever gets attacked. So it's like you can make it move faster, take a little more damage. The main reason I kept it in, though, was because it did have that bottom heal.
Yeah.
So I have a heal 2 at range 3 on the bottom. So I could pair that with one of the Elixir or the Restorative Mist. So like if I needed to, I could heal two different targets pretty far away from each other, actually. You guys could be like 6-7 tiles away from each other with me in the middle, and I could get both of you.
Yeah, that was great. Another thing, nice thing about the decoys, I do play, while I'm playing the Brute and trying to tank for the group, the Brute's super mobile. Like, he's more mobile than you probably realize initially, and I played him very mobile, and so I could be tanking for a while and then decide I need to go get the boss in the back or tie up some archers or something, mm-hmm. and I'm just jumping. Like, I'm jumping away from the group and, you know, 5-6 squares at a time, 5 or 6 hexes at a time often. Now I'm not there next to you. If you, in a pinch, you've got that decoy to plop down to at least soak up a couple of attacks, right?
Yeah. The other level 1 card I kept was Toxic Bolt. It's got a bottom attack 5, range 2. It is a loss, but it's a nice kind of, it's a finisher. If I need it, I took out more than one elite with that. The top, though, I really like because it's range 3, attack 2, and it inflicts poison, which effectively it's kind of like that other card that I can give all adjacent enemies like a +1 attack. I can sort of do that on a specific creature now by giving it poison, and you guys can just swing in and you're doing bonus damage. Which was really nice to get around. I think we used that on a couple shielded enemies, right?
Yeah. Yeah, poison's great. There's very few situations where it's bad to, you know, like, if it's got any hit points at all, just pop a poison on there. And sure, you're just doing attack too, but that poison's going to really add up over time.
Right.
Especially with, you know, 3 other people in the party wailing on whatever you're focused on and maybe a couple summons out there. Poison for us has gotten a lot of mileage. It's one of the stronger status effects for sure.
And being able to inflict that at range is really nice as well.
Yeah.
So I can sort of soften up a target a little bit, give it some poison, and then it primes it for you guys to jump in and kind of finish the job.
It also happens to produce a nature, which is nice for the Spellweaver from time to time.
Although, admittedly, we didn't use a lot of elements. Because I can make earth and moon and fire.
Yeah.
That was one thing we kept running into. The Mind Thief has a card that consumes a moon and inserts a curse card into the monster deck, which is awesome. But I think I'm, up to now, I've been the only one who can generate one consistently.
But it's at a loss.
It's at a loss, exactly. So I didn't want to use that early on, and early on is the best time for Skip to add the curse card in. So we didn't end up doing that combo as much, unfortunately. So yeah, that's all the level 1 cards. Potent Potables is the level X card I've been playing with. I talked about Stamina Booster, which was the level 2 card I brought in. And just for comparison, the other level 2 card was Disorienting Flash, which I was really tempted by because it lets you stun 2 targets, except that was a loss. If that wasn't a loss, I probably would have taken Disorienting Flash in for the stun effect, because that definitely saved our butts quite a bit. And the muddle adjacent enemies and move away is sort of similar to the bottom of Net Shooter, but it doesn't stop them from chasing you and attacking you. And again, it's a very specific scenario where they've attacked you and you now need to get away.
Yeah, I kind of feel like if you're adjacent to a lot of enemies to muddle, you've screwed up somehow.
Yeah, like the Tinkerer is range almost entirely, so he's not going to be running into the thick of it. He's going to be sort of just behind the front line, keeping you guys alive, that kind of stuff. So that's why I didn't pick Disorienting Flash. It didn't seem to have strong enough things compared to Stamina Booster to make it worth it. And then when I hit level 3, I had a choice between, what was it, Crankbow and Tinkerer's Tools. So Crankbow has an upper of attack 6 at range 5. Obviously, that's a loss because it's an amazing, amazing attack. Again, really strong closer. And the bottom is a move 4, which is always going to be useful.
Yeah.
Compared to the Tinkerer's Tools, which was, it had an upper of disarm 1 trap, and you get an experience. And the bottom of create 1 stun trap in an adjacent empty hex. And kind of going back to my thoughts on traps in this, it's hard to get an enemy to walk into one, so for me, I didn't see a lot of value in having trap cards once I kind of learned that, which kind of kills the bottom and the upper. I mean, we navigated through our traps pretty well.
Yeah.
And I think the one time I had to go through one that I didn't, like, I couldn't get around, that was when I threw the decoy on it and the decoy just soaked up the damage and I walked through.
There was one side quest we did during our second play session where we had to kind of navigate a bunch of traps. It would have been nice there, but that one occurrence doesn't really justify that card, you know?
It's, right. Because I think at least two of you have jump. So you were just hopping over stuff to begin with.
Yep. And once I got a couple levels on me, if I needed to step on a trap, fine. Like, whatever. It's 3 or 4 damage.
Yeah, because I'm right there. I can just heal you right back up.
Yep.
So, yeah, I ended up going with Crankbow on that. You had that strong finisher up top that you could attack with and move for, which is always going to be nice. And like we mentioned, I did make it to level 4, but that was the same mission that I retired, so I didn't really end up picking level 4 cards.
Right.
The two of them I had available are the Dangerous Contraption, which is sort of a beefed up decoy. It's the same health and movement, but now it attacks for 2, and it also has a move 4. I'm not sure that I would swap that out. Like, it seems like an obvious one since now the decoy would be doing damage. Mm-hmm. But again, it hasn't been living that long in the late game.
It's true.
And I don't know that I would swap out like the bottom heal 2 at range 3 for a move 4. I have a fair amount of movement throughout the rest of the deck so far. So I don't know if I'd keep that one. Although Microbots is a dual loss card. So it's got an upper loss ability of heal 6 at range 3 and a bottom move 3 and loot 1.
I have a hard time finding dual loss cards to be playable at all.
Yeah, because at a point you're just going to keep them in your deck for like move 2s and attack 2s, and at that point you should, yeah, there's better stuff.
Yeah, I feel like if it was me, I would take Dangerous Contraption there, but you bring up a good point. Like, you might choose that card but not use it, at least not use it every encounter, right? It gives you a second summon to bring in, but
yeah, if I did, if I found a point where I'm not healing as much, I'd probably bring that in. Mm-hmm. And then swap out the heal 2 at range 3 for a move 4, because extra movement is always going to be a nice thing.
Your other option would be don't take either the Microbots or the Dangerous Contraption and go pick up the level 3 Tinkerer's Tools or the level 2 Disorienting Flash, but I don't know if those are really great options either.
Yeah, it's the same, because I mean, either one of those, I still have to give up one of the other cards I have, and none of those really speak to me better than what was in the rest of the deck so far that we talked about.
Okay, so that kind of covers all the cards that you've gotten up to this point. And I think you've mentioned the majority of your items, because you actually didn't end up with a lot of items, which is weird to me as the brute. Like, I have every single item slot full, but you don't.
Well, to be fair, you kept doing scenarios and you get like an item from a treasure chest or... Yeah, I don't... you'll notice I dropped the loot card. I had that in at one point. Oh, no, I kept that in. That was the hook gun. My bad. I considered dropping it, but then I kept it because of that one scenario we had where we could only collect things using loot.
Oh, yeah, yep.
I don't... As a tinkerer, I'm not picking up as much treasure, apparently, as Skip does as a mine thief and a coin thief, evidently. So I wasn't getting as much gold, and I wasn't getting as much loot on the chest. So I think that's part of the thing that like just stacked you with goods and items.
That's fair. So you mainly had Eagle Eye Goggles and Stamina Potion?
Stamina Potion, yeah. The Stamina Potion I got after the 4th or 5th scenario.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I didn't buy it sooner, because it's really nice to get those 2 cards back out of discard. So right off the bat, Tinkerer has a 12 card hand. It's going to be the biggest of anyone you're playing, and being able to get 2 cards back effectively gives you a 14 card hand, as long as you're not using lost cards early.
Sure.
So the idea is that you can play a hand, you play your next turn and pull 2 cards back in, which was really, really nice in those later games.
So any tips you have for people thinking about playing the Tinkerer? And is it a class you ended up enjoying? Were you sad to retire him when it came time?
Oh, yeah. I think I was confused at the time as to how retirement worked.
Well, sure, we hadn't done it before.
Yeah, so you can upgrade the cards, and the cards will stay upgraded, but the character itself is fully retired. Like, my version of the Tinkerer is gone. So all the perks I added that tweaked the combat deck, the items I had accrued, things like that, I think really helped it, because most of my perks went into removing negatives from the deck, and I think the only one I had left was the curse.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really excited to add in these like plus one and wound that I thought was going to be amazing for some of this stuff, and then realized like that character's gone. So I was a little sad to see him go. As far as tips for playing it and like kind of closing thoughts, what I really enjoyed about the Tinkerer as a support role was how broad the spectrum was, because he had all these healing options. He had a lot of area of attack things to sort of soften things up. He had buffs. He had like status effects that he could inflict. He can inflict poison, stun, immobilize. What else do we have on here? Wound was a big one. So just like all the various ways that he can actually go about supporting the team is really, really nice. And, you know, I was reading a bit on it after the first few sessions that we played, and a lot of people will tell you, go either full healer or full combat. And they sort of tie it to the number of players in the game. So if you have a low number of players, just go ahead with combat. Killing the things before they do damage will be fine. If you're going to go higher number of players, it's more things making more damage. So stick with healer. But in my case, my retirement goal involved killing 20 elites. And since the Tinkerer is not a huge damage class to begin with, and elites are harder to kill, it was going to be trickier for me to count on you guys to get things within like one or two health for me to finish it off. So I ended up kind of splitting the difference, basically ignoring everybody's advice. But to the credit, right? We're what, 9 scenarios in, I retired this character killing 20 elites within, before I even hit level 4, basically.
Yeah.
And I never felt like I didn't have something to do. It's not like I hid back there and let you guys do all the work. I got kills and I was fairly effective. I wasn't dealing the same level of damage that you guys might have, but I think he was holding his own pretty well.
I mean, there's times we definitely needed your damage. Like, it came in, especially your area of effect attacks. Like, when we needed to wipe rooms, you would come in and get the job done.
Exactly. And I think a big part of that is potent potables. Like, it, you know, it seems like a thing. Like, oh, you know, you're only adding 2 health, but it allowed me to delay heal actions. It allowed my heals to be more effective over time anyways. So I was able to balance that out with the damage cards I kept in, like Crank Bow, for example, so that I could do these large finishers or large area of effect attacks. And so it somehow balanced healing and damage. Because I don't think, outside of the first scenario, and there was one other time, I think most of the times we just exhausted out. I don't know that we died that much, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah. I mean, there's one or two times somebody took a lot of damage and had to discard cards to negate it and kind of got in trouble that way. But for the most part, no, we weren't dropping.
Because there was, I think, one in the first scenario with you.
Maybe.
And then, you made a sacrifice play in another one, which we knew was going to happen.
Yes, yeah.
And that one even still, to an extent, was us kind of exhausting out because, you know, if I had more longevity, I could have gotten up there and healed you. But mm-hmm. I was like, this is my last turn.
So, you bring up a good point, though, of how your goal card dictated kind of how you played the class to an extent. And maybe it drove you into a way that conventional wisdom says don't go, but you found it to be effective. And honestly, it probably made your class more fun. Like, your goal, everybody knew what your goal was, right? It came into play all the time. You're trying to negotiate people to let you have the elites.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And like, it keeps things interesting and fun and kind of gives extra challenges to the sessions.
I will say, and I don't know, maybe there's somebody out here listening to this wondering, like, why were you gunning for retirement before you even hit level 4? Disclaimer, didn't quite understand how it worked. Whatever, sounded cool. But having done it, I think I'd probably opt for leveling up characters faster than retiring them. Because I started looking through the rest of the Tinkerer cards, and he's got some pretty crazy stuff coming down the line.
Yeah.
Not going to go into it, but So I didn't really get a chance to kind of build the character fully into something that, that might have been even more fun to play as. And I think it'd have the added benefit, like as a team, if you guys are focusing on leveling up more than retiring characters, when we do retire characters and get the new ones in, now they're at higher levels, so we have that that greater amount of versatility to customize in the way we want. Because the, the box we opened up and, you know, I looked through all the cards and the character stuff, I'm like, all right, cool, but we're only at Prosperity 2 or whatever it is. So my character's at level 2, so he's... It's just a step above starting over with another character.
Right.
Not that I'm disappointed with what I got, but...
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and tell people the box you got to open without, you know, without spoiling anything for that box. Just kind of...
What did you say it was? Box number 17?
It is box 17, which is the... Which,
the dual figurines box. And yeah, I was... I'm excited. We haven't yet played a session with my new class.
Yeah.
And I am amped to do so. I've been looking through some of the cards and they look huge as far as the implications on what they're going to have on gameplay. So it's a little bittersweet. Like I miss my Tinkerer. I was loving playing as him. And I'm sad that, you know, he's not just going to be there for somebody to pick up and play as later. Yeah. But I am also really excited to start with this new class, whatever we want to call it.
Yeah. So one cool thing, though, is like later on, like let's say you play this new class for a while and it gets retired. Mm-hmm. You can, in theory, go back and play a new Tinkerer later on. Right. And by that point, the Prosperity will be up and you'll be back kind of where you were. Maybe try some different stuff out based on your goal for that one. Or what? Like if you really do find that you love this class, it's not locked out.
It's not gone
forever.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I think the interesting little tidbit in that is that a character you play with for a while versus waiting to grab one when the level's going to be up later in the game.
Yeah.
My Tinkerer had a few extra perks because I was doing these scenario challenges as we went. And I think that's kind of what made the deck so beefy. And I also had the perk that prevented scenario negative scenario effects, which was super, super useful on some of those.
Yeah, because we're dumb with our road events.
You know, sometimes our road events don't give us an option. And that's sometimes true. We wander into a forest fire because I think it's a good idea.
So any got any parting wisdom for us?
I think that's what I just did.
All right. Excellent. Well, thank you everyone for joining us for this this special edition of Misadventures. Hopefully you've learned a bit about the Tinkerer, have a better idea of how to play the Tinkerer, and maybe a fresh perspective a little bit on how it can be played in a large group. So, yeah, thanks for coming in, and join us next time when we will pick up our regularly scheduled episodes. Until then, enjoy and get more games in of Gloomhaven.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. You've been listening to Misadventures, a Gloomhaven podcast brought to you by Gamer Public Radio. Please join us every Friday for new episodes at misadventurespodcast.com or find us on your podcast application of choice. Music for this podcast is provided by Kevin McLeod. For more of Kevin's work, please check out incompetech.com. See you next time.